Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today we open with some top national news that could impact people in our region. On our Capitol Report, hear why a federal judge has overturned a third version of President Donald Trump's executive order banning travel from several Muslim nations. Learn about a bipartisan health care reform measure gaining traction in the Senate. Hear how a judge has ruled on a teenage immigrant girl in a federal detention facility whom the Trump administration has blocked from getting an abortion, a key case regarding constitutional rights for undocumented immigrants. Then, we'll have the latest toll from those deadly wildfires in Northern California and share the experience of a water truck driver from Alpine here in East County who's been on the scene in Napa Valley. The National Weather Service has issued a fire weather watch for this weekend, when Santa Ana winds are expected to surge across our region. CAL FIRE is beefing up its staffing to prepare, and we'll have details. The El Cajon City Council has voted to crack down on illegal marijuana dispensaries and ban outdoor growing by individuals. Meanwhile, Councilman Ben Colasio has defied a ban on El Cajon Council members using cell phones during meetings, and the mayor threatened to censure him. Hear the testy exchange on today's show. The county has released information on hepatitis A cases countywide by zip code, and we'll tell you which communities have had the highest number of cases later today. Lake Jennings will be closed for the next 2 weeks, and the water may be turning pink. Find out why on today's show. Tony the Movie will be premiering in La Mesa, shining a light on homelessness in San Diego and La Mesa, along with a panel discussion coming up. On Crime Beat, hear about a major nationwide FBI sweep that's resulted in human trafficking arrests and rescuing young victims of sex traffickers, including here in San Diego. On Destination East County, we'll have all the most fun festivals and events coming up this week, from Haunt Fest on Main to A Taste of East County, plus lots more events coming up soon, including many haunting Halloween happenings. On Green Scene, learn about National Wildlife Federation's Million Pollinating Gardens Challenge to help save monarch butterflies that are disappearing. Then, we'll be re-airing one of our Best of East County segments, taking you to the Julian Fiddling and Picking competition in the mountains of East County. El Cajon Police Department has some safety tips for teen drivers today, and we'll also have details on a major grant received by San Diego State University for research into autism. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Capitol Report. President Trump's third travel ban has been struck down. A federal judge granted Hawaii's request to temporarily block the order a day before it was set to go into effect. In the ruling, Judge Derek Watson says that the third version of the president's executive order suffers from precisely the same maladies as its predecessor. It lacks sufficient findings that the entry of more than 150 million nationals from six specified countries would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, the judge said in granting plaintiff's motion for a temporary restraining order. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said the decision undercuts the president's efforts to keep the American people safe and enforce minimum security standards for entry into the United States. The travel ban applied to people born in Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, Yemen, Chad, North Korea, and Venezuela. The courts left in place bans against North Korea and certain Venezuelan officials, Associated Press reports. Trump's executive order had set different rules for different countries. According to the Washington Post, for Syria and North Korea, the president's proclamation blocked immigrants wanting to relocate to the United States and non-immigrants wishing to visit. For Iran, the proclamation blocked both immigrants and non-immigrants, but not students and people participating in a cultural exchange. For Chad, Libya, and Yemen, it blocked immigrants and those with business or tourist visas, and it barred Somalians from coming as immigrants. The Venezuela ban only applied to certain government officials. Hawaii ordered that this was Trump's attempt to fulfill his campaign promise of a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. In its challenge to the third version of the travel ban, Hawaii claims Trump has never renounced or repudiated his calls for a ban on Muslim immigration. California, Washington State, Massachusetts, Oregon, New York, and Maryland are also challenging the ruling, the BBC reports. Justice Department spokesperson Ian Pryor has promised a swift appeal in the interests of national security. The ban is expected to work its way up to the Supreme Court, reports CNN. Huckabee said in a statement, "These restrictions are vital to ensuring that foreign nationals comply with the minimum security standards required for the integrity of our immigration system and the security of our nation. We are therefore confident that the judiciary will ultimately uphold the president's lawful and necessary action and swiftly restore its vital protections for the safety of the American people." But Hawaii Attorney General Doug Chin concludes, "This is the third time Hawaii has gone to court to stop President Trump from issuing a travel ban that discriminates against people based on their nation of origin or religion." He called the court decision another victory for the rule of law.
Days after President Donald Trump announced cancellation of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, subsidies to insurance companies, or Obamacare subsidies to insurance companies, an action critics contended would destabilize the health insurance marketplace, Republican Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee and Democratic Senator Patty Murray of Washington have announced a deal. Their plan would fund health care cost-sharing reduction payments until 2019 and offer states more flexibility in health care regulation. The subsidies go to the insurance companies to lower out-of-pocket costs for 6 to 7 million low-income Americans. The plan also allows states to approve copper plans at lower costs but also reduce coverage, including catastrophic care-only plans offered to consumers over age 30. Currently, only those under age 30 may buy such pared-down plans. The deal also authorizes $106 million in funding to support Obamacare enrollment, reports Politico. The Trump administration had slashed funding to inform consumers about Obamacare enrollment deadlines and assist them with their applications. President Trump expressed optimism at the plan, but said it is a short-term deal that should eventually be replaced by block grants going to the states. He had canceled the subsidies for insurers under the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, last week, which prompted the announcement of the plan, which has been in the works since the latest appeal attempt failed. Alexander held a luncheon for Republican senators Tuesday, where he outlined the plan. Republican Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana said, "Most of the members of the conference are finding out about the details for the first time. I don't think anybody beyond Lamar and a few others know," adding, "the details are important." Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, the Senate minority leader, said, "Unless our Republican colleagues act, the American people will know exactly where to place the blame when their premiums shoot up and when millions lose coverage," reports the New York Times. Trump has blamed Democrats for the skyrocketing copays and out-of-pocket expenses many would face due to his cancellation of the subsidy, tweeting, "Any increase in Obamacare premiums is a fault of Democrats for giving us a product that never had a chance of working." Senator Alexander says he and Senator Murray are working to round up co-sponsors for their bill. Democratic Senators Al Franken and Amy Klobuchar support the plan, reports the Minneapolis Star-Tribune, in part because it is estimated to save MinnesotaCare $742 million. Reuters reports that former Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders also supports the bipartisan plan. Republicans are split on whether or not to support the plan. Some believe the subsidies help their low-income constituents with lower out-of-pocket costs, while others believe subsidies to insurance companies are part of a system they were set on dismantling. Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina said of the health care measure, "We could be quickly distracted by that," adding, "We don't want to shift our focus away from tax reform." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jean Carpenter.
A federal judge on Wednesday ruled that the Trump administration has violated the rights of a 17-year-old undocumented immigrant who was detained in Texas by refusing to allow her to have an abortion. The Trump administration has appealed. Failure to comply with this order may result in a finding of contempt, wrote D.C. Circuit Judge Tanya Chutkan. A study in 2014 by Fusion found that a staggering 80% of women and girls from Central America who cross into the U.S. over the Mexican border are raped along their journey here, and an earlier report by Amnesty International put the estimate at 60%. Huffington Post has reported, many of these women flee their homelands to escape violence and sex trafficking risks, only to suffer the same fate en route to the U.S. at the hands of smugglers. And yet the Trump administration, in a change from the Obama administration, has been prohibiting women and even young teens from obtaining access to abortions, even if they're raped. Scott Lloyd, director of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is responsible for unaccompanied minors apprehended crossing the border, wrote in a March email that federally funded shelters should not be supporting abortion services pre- or post-release. Only pregnancy services and life-affirming options counseling, except in medical emergencies. The teenager in the lawsuit is in her 15th week of pregnancy, and she was picked up crossing the border back in early September, over a month ago, when she was still in her first trimester. She is identified only as Jane Doe, and her country of origin is not listed. She had the funds to pay for her own abortion, and she was not asking for federal funding for the procedure. The clock is ticking, since Texas, where she is detained, bans most abortions after 20 weeks. Either way, her future seems bleak. If deported, she will return to the harsh conditions that she fled from, potentially now with an unwanted child to care for, a child who could also be at risk of dangers that compelled this teenage girl to leave home. The judge ruled that the Trump administration violated the law not only by denying the teen's request for an abortion, but also by notifying her parents and ordering her to a Christian counseling center that sought to talk her out of the abortion. The judge has not yet acted on a request by the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, which is representing the girl, to expand that judicial ruling to all minors in federal custody. The Trump administration had argued that illegal immigrants are not entitled to constitutional protections, but the judge rejected that argument and found that the girl would suffer irreparable injury, including health risks, if the government blocks her from terminating her pregnancy. Judge Chutkan also banned the government from retaliating against the teen for her decision. Anti-abortion groups have supported the government's effort to block the young woman's abortion. Meanwhile, protesters have gathered outside the U.S. Health and Human Services Department on Friday, calling on the agency to protect the young woman's right to choose. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A contracted firefighter from Missouri has died in Napa Valley after the water truck he was driving overturned. Fatigue may have been a factor, according to CAL FIRE. The story highlights the importance of these unsung heroes, the water tenders, as water truck drivers on the fire lines are known. Richard Edwards, a contracted water tender from Alpine, is on the scene in Napa. He's been sending photos documenting his experience in the fires to East County Magazine, images showing his water truck dwarfed by towering plumes of orange smoke blotting out the sun as he drives toward the inferno. He also sent photos of poignant notes of thanks left by some Napa area residents. One handwritten note reads, "Firefighters, thank you for putting in all your time and effort to protect everyone. Your dedication to the cause is greatly appreciated. In our time of need, you have shown us great leadership and bravery. In your time of struggle and fatigue, remember your purpose and intentions to find that extra strength within. Take time to hug your brother and remember to show yourself patience. Thanks again." The note signed by Nia McWilliams concludes, adding, "Please pass this note on to another firefighter." So far, the 17 fires in Northern California have killed 41 people, charred over 330 square miles, and burned over 5,700 homes and other buildings. More than 90,000 people have been evacuated. High winds and hot, dry weather have improved from last week, and firefighters are making progress battling the blazes, which have charred an area larger than San Francisco, Sacramento, and several smaller counties combined. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Valerie Watts.
As firefighters in Northern California continue to make progress on 9 large wildfires still burning across the state, the true magnitude of the devastation of loss of life and property is beginning to come to life. This recent series of fires is the deadliest in California state history. Since the start of the October fire siege on October 8th, there have been 21 major wildfires that burned over 245,000 acres, forced 100,000 people to evacuate, destroyed 6,900 structures, and sadly, took the lives of 42 people. As many of our firefighters begin to return back to the county, in this week marking the 10th anniversary of the deadly 2007 firestorms, attention now turns to critical fire weather conditions that will be moving into Southern California the next few days. The National Weather Service has issued a fire weather watch for this weekend through early next week due to low humidity, high temperatures, and gusty winds. A Santa Ana wind event will develop on Sunday in San Diego County. Fuels throughout the county are very dry and will support significant fire activity should an ignition occur, CAL FIRE warns. Chief Tony Meacham, CAL FIRE San Diego Unit and County Fire Chief, says, though CAL FIRE has year-round staffing in Southern California, these conditions have warranted adding additional resources for the duration of the fire weather watch that brings an elevated threat of wildfire. All CAL FIRE personnel will be called back to work. County Fire Reserve firefighters are being utilized to increase staffing on all frontline engines. Reserve firefighters are covering 5 county water tenders. Defense support to civilian authorities' immediate response agreement has been activated, and CAL FIRE personnel are assigned to the Navy and Marine Corps in the event that military helicopters are needed. CAL FIRE is funding the City of San Diego to staff a strike team of wildland fire engines for the weekend, also funding the North Zone to staff a strike team of wildland fire engines over the next few days there. CAL FIRE has also made contact with CONAFOR, that's the Baja Mexico version of CAL FIRE, and is prepared to use its agreement with Mexico if needed. CAL FIRE has opened Brown Field as a reload base and will be bringing in 2 large air tankers there. The state's firefighting agency is asking everyone to please be extra cautious during the heightened fire danger period in order to prevent wildfires. One less spark means one less wildfire, and that could save lives. For more fire prevention and evacuation tips, you can visit readyforwildfire.org and readysandiego.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
El Cajon City Council voted unanimously last week to ban outdoor growing of marijuana by individuals and to increase penalties for commercial marijuana dispensaries and commercial growing facilities, which are illegal under existing city law. 10 residents testified in favor of the tough new ordinance, including reformed drug addicts and a neighbor of a dispensary recently shut down. No one spoke against the ordinance. The new law increases penalties to include fines up to $2,500 for each violation being charged to the owner of a dispensary and the owner of the building where the dispensary is located. Mayor Bill Wells calls this significant teeth. The city of El Cajon has forced closure of 31 illegally operating marijuana dispensaries in the past 7 years, the most recent being a dispensary on West Main Street operated by Fred Jaju and West Main Street LLC. The San Diego County Superior Court has ordered Jeju and the parent organization to pay the city of El Cajon $75,000 in fines and penalties for violating El Cajon's land use regulations. Jamie Freitas thanked the council for closing the illegal dispensary next to his property, which he said attracted hundreds of cars, loud music, and drug paraphernalia on the street. Freitas noted that Councilman Ben Colasio took campaign contributions from the dispensary's owner. Any member of the city council who doesn't vote to pass this new ordinance for higher fines and making it a criminal offense doesn't have the interests of the people of El Cajon, he said. In response, Colasio said that he believes that citizens should have access to medical marijuana because it has proven to treat illnesses, but added that he opposes children smoking marijuana or people abusing it for recreational purposes. El Cajon City Attorney Morgan Foley said that Colasio did not need to recuse himself from voting because it was a vote on a broad citywide issue rather than a specific property. Colasio joined his colleagues in unanimous support of the tough new marijuana restrictions, which were also recommended by the city's planning commission. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
During last week's El Cajon City Council meeting, Councilman Ben Colasio openly defied a recent vote by the council banning use of personal electronic devices, including cell phones, by council members during public hearings. Mayor Wells asked Colasio to put his phone away, prompting this exchange, which ended with the mayor threatening to censure Colasio if he defies the ban again.
Mr. Colasio, please put your phone away. Would you please put the phone away? It's in your hands. Would you please put it out of your hands? Okay. Mr. Kalasha, we're not doing this to hurt you or subject you to any particular...
To hurt me. You absolutely are doing it to hurt me. You called on me, so...
You know what?
And also, I was the only one using a laptop on here before, so I'm going to call you out on that, too.
What does that mean?
That means I was the only one using a laptop, and then you decided to create an ordinance with your buddies. And I know it was Gary that told you I was on my phone earlier. But you had no right to tell me if I'm having an emergency on my phone.
Gary.
And if I'm having an emergency on my phone, not you or anybody else in this room could tell me to put my phone on.
Are you having an emergency?
You understand? Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm not going to share that emergency with you.
So, I'm going to tell you, you need to put your phone away, and you need to comply with the rules of the city.
The rules don't say
that. We're going to have to. I have no option but to ask for a censor. I'm giving you one more warning. I'll ask you at the next meeting if you're oppositional and defiant at that point. I'm going to ask the city council to censor you.
That's not the way it works.
Okay.
Now, earlier this year, following the lead of other California cities and a recommendation by the League of California Cities, the El Cajon City Council majority voted to ban use of wireless devices by members during council meetings, citing potential violations of the California Brown Act. That state law mandates that during public hearings, elected officials may consider only evidence presented, not outside communications, which could open the door for influence by lobbyists or others. Kalasha recently filed a complaint with the State of California Department of Fair Employment and Housing, claiming he was discriminated against by the city after the council voted 4-1 with Kalasha opposed to ban personal electronic devices on the days during council meetings. Members can use city-issued Apple iPad tablets configured to only allow access to City of El Cajon websites and access to the city's financial budget documents and municipal codes. If the council were to censure Kalasha, it would be an unprecedented action. Council did previously vote in 2013 to condemn the criminal actions of Jillian Hanson Cox, but only after she had resigned from the council and pled guilty to embezzling funds from her employer. Mayor Wells told East County Magazine that his concern was about Colosio's lack of respect for the people of El Cajon, as well as other recent controversies, including allegations of fraud, mistreatment of women, improper paperwork for nonprofit organizations, and lawsuits that he's threatened to file against the city, as well as his attacks on media. Wells adds, all of these things are an embarrassment to the city and the council. Colosio has refused to answer questions for this story and for other recent reports. For East County Magazine in El Cajon, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Valerie Watts with a health report. The County of San Diego has released a map showing the number of hepatitis A cases by zip code. By far the largest share of the county's 490 cases have occurred in downtown San Diego's 92101 zip code, which has had 81 people diagnosed. But cases have been diagnosed across the region, and some East County communities have high clusters of the contagious illness. El Cajon's 92020 and 92021 zip codes have had 29 and 18 cases, respectively. In La Mesa, the 91941 and 91942 zip codes have had 4 and 7 cases. Santee's 92071 zip code has 9 cases listed, while Spring Valley's 91977 has 6 cases. There are clusters in some coastal communities with isolated cases in areas as far-flung as Ramona and Descanso. Both San Diego County and the state of California have declared emergencies due to the hepatitis A epidemic, which has been spread primarily through the homeless population and drug users. Vaccinations are recommended for these at-risk populations and anyone who comes into contact with them. Thus far, 18 deaths and 342 hospitalizations have resulted from the hepatitis A outbreak in San Diego County, leading communities to take actions such as opening public restrooms, power washing streets and sidewalks, cleaning up homeless encampments, and making efforts to get homeless people into temporary or long-term shelters.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the Helix Water District. Lake Jennings, the lake, not the campground, will be closed to all activities, including fishing and boating, from October 30th through November 16th, so that the Helix Water District can study the lake's hydraulics. Helix is working with the Scripps Institution of Oceanography to conduct the testing. The goal is to gather data to support development of a computer model that can be used to predict the lake's hydraulic mixing actions. Scripps will use a dye that's approved by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as part of the testing process, and it may be possible during that testing to see a color in the lake water that could range from pink to red. The dye is not harmful, the district says, and will dissipate over the course of the testing period. Not to worry, you won't be drinking the water from Lake Jennings during the testing period.
You're invited to join La Mesa Conversations and the La Mesa First United Methodist Church's Community Outreach Ministry for a joint presentation of the new film, Tony, the Movie, a film about homelessness in San Diego. The film will be shown on October 30th. The screening at the church will be followed by a panel presentation and discussion about homelessness in San Diego and La Mesa with a question and answer session. Panel participants will include director Dennis Stein, the movie's star, Tony Rodriguez, homeless advocate Michael McConnell, and pastor Albert Kim. The program is from 6 to 8 p.m. with an optional buffet dinner at 5:30. A suggested donation will help support programs to benefit the homeless. For registration, you can visit the La Mesa Conversation Facebook page. To learn more about Tony the Movie, you can visit tony-themovie.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, along with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, have recovered 84 minors and arrested 120 traffickers as part of a nationwide effort focused on underage human trafficking. Locally, the operation recovered a 16-year-old girl and led to the arrest of three traffickers as a result of operations based here in the FBI's San Diego field office. This is the 11th time that the FBI has led Operation Cross Country, which took place this year in 55 FBI field offices and involved 78 state and local task force, consisting of hundreds of law enforcement partners. This year's coordinated operations also included international partners in Canada, the United Kingdom, Thailand, Cambodia, and the Philippines. FBI Director Chris Wray says we at the FBI have no greater mission than to protect our nation's children from harm. Unfortunately, the number of traffickers arrested and the number of children recovered reinforces why we need to continue to do this important work, he says, adding, this operation isn't just about taking traffickers off the street. It's about making sure we offer help and a way out to these young victims who find themselves caught in a vicious cycle of abuse. As part of Operation Cross Country earlier this month, FBI agents and task force officers staged operations in hotels, casinos, and truck stops, as well as on street corners and internet websites. The youngest victim recovered during this year's operation was just 3 months old, and the average age of victims recovered during the operation was 15. Minors rescued during the operation are offered assistance from State Protective Services and the FBI's Victim Services Division. Victims may receive medical and mental health counseling as well as other help. Operation Cross Country is part of the FBI's Innocence Lost National Initiative, which started in 2003 and has led to more than 6,500 children being found and rescued. For more information on Operation Cross Country and the Innocence Lost Initiative, you can visit FBI.gov.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Jonathan Getz.
And this is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting Destination East County.
This week's Destination East County includes Hauntfest on Main in El Cajon, Carnival for Canines in La Mesa, Borrego Days Desert Festival and Parade, A Toast to East County, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, Alpacas at the Summer's Past Pumpkin Patch, Scotty's Scare Trail, and the Pumpkin Express train ride in Campo.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a Haunted Elks Lodge, a Halloween Harvest Festival, the Hills Halloween Party, a Spooky Campover, the Boulevard Boo Parade, a Hallow Scream Night, a High Desert Mountain Yoga Retreat, an Autumn Fest and Plant Sale, the Ramona Art and Wine Festival, a live hawk demonstration, a Veterans Day ceremony, and the 71st Annual Mother Goose Parade.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The 6th Annual Haunt Fest on Main will be held this Friday night, October 20th, from 5 to 10 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. This fun, family-friendly Halloween-themed event features live music on the promenade stage, including the stand-up guys and the amazing 80s All-Stars. This event also features costume contests on the Main Street stage, carnival rides, crafts, games, car show, a candy trail, kids' zone with outdoor movies, face painting, inflatables, a pumpkin patch, Ghostbusters, and more. Hauntfest on Main is presented by the City of El Cajon and the Downtown El Cajon Business Partners. For all the haunting details, you can visit hauntfest.org.
Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa is going to the dogs. Carnival for Canines will be held at the park on Saturday, October 21st, from noon to 4 p.m., hosted by KSON Radio to benefit Jackie Blue's Rescue Angels, a Hakumba nonprofit that finds loving homes for abandoned and shelter animals. A doggy costume contest will be held, with registration starting at 1 p.m. and judging at 2 p.m. Well-socialized dogs on leashes are welcome to join in the fun, but please be sure vaccines are up to date. This event includes games for kids, gourmet food, crafts and vendors, plus a pet agility course, microchipping services, pet rescue groups, and an opportunity drawing. There will also be a food and supply drive to benefit poor communities in rural East County, so please bring new pet food, toys, leashes, collars, and other pet items to donate.
The 52nd Annual Borrego Days Desert Festival kicks off on Saturday, October 21st, and continues Sunday, October 22nd. The Borrego Days Parade steps off at 10 a.m. on Saturday along Palm Canyon Drive and Christmas Circle in Borrego Springs, complete with pre-parade flyover, floats, marching bands, and trick-riding Western cowboys. Borrego Days also includes arts and crafts and a carnival fun zone for kids both days, plus live music for dancing under the stars on Saturday night. For more information, you can visit borregodays.com.
The San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce will present this year's A Toast to East County on Sunday, October 22nd from 1 to 4 p.m. at the El Cajon Elks Lodge. You can enjoy wine tasting, craft beer samples, restaurant tastings, honey and cheese, olive oil, and more, plus live music, giveaways, and Trailblazer Awards presented by Manis Vineyards. For details, visit eastcountychamber.org.
Step back in time to a fur trading and colonial camp from the 1700s to the 1840s at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous. This event continues this weekend through October 22nd at the Madagway Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel in the mountains of San Diego's East County. You can see demonstrations of survival skills such as cooking, archery, tomahawk throwing, black powder shooting, and tool making. For more information, you can visit the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous page on Facebook.
The Pumpkin Patch at Summer's Past Farms in Flynn Springs invites you to enjoy the Pumpkin Patch weekends, complete with a corn maze, jumpy for kids, popcorn, and more. This Sunday, October 22nd, you can visit with alpacas from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and on Saturday, October 28th, the Alpine Stagecoach Lions Club will host a dog show, complete with costume contest from 1 to 4 p.m. For a full schedule of activities, you can visit summerspastfarms.com.
Scotty's Scare Trail, located at the Marshall Scotty's Abandoned Amusement Park in Flynn Springs, just east of El Cajon, is rumored to be haunted by old employees and children who never left, plus monsters roaming the premises. Open Fridays and Saturdays in October from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., The Scare Trail aims to create haunting memories for you, whether or not you've ever visited this once-enchanted destination as a child. For more chilling details, you can visit scaretrail.com.
The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association is hosting its 12th annual Pumpkin Express Halloween celebration. You're invited to ride decorated vintage rail cars through the San Diego County mountains as fall descends upon the Campo community. Trains depart from the Campo Depot 3 times daily each Saturday and Sunday in October. Keep your eyes open for the Grim Reaper, who may be stowed away on board. After the train ride, children and their parents will enjoy decorating pumpkins from an indoor pumpkin patch. You can also walk through one of the 2 haunted trains with a creepy cast of goblins and ghouls, and take home a pumpkin for each train rider. For reservations and details, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at psrm.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The El Cajon Elks Lodge 1812 is teaming up with the local haunted house production company Scare Ventures to present a haunted lodge for the community in their parking lot from October 26th through the 31st. The haunted lodge will feature a maze and 4 different key scare areas for guests to experience, plus activities and booths. There will also be early evening hours set aside for children under 12 to experience a less scary version of the haunted lodge that is family-friendly, where youngsters will be treated to Halloween candy from nicer monsters as they tour the lodge maze. The Elks, who have been serving the community for 60 years, will donate 100% of the proceeds from the event for children's charities. For details and tickets, visit elcajonelks.com.
The Mount Helix Park Foundation and Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association are joining together for a fun-filled Halloween Harvest Family Festival at the top of Mount Helix Park for neighborhood families on Sunday, October 29th from 2 to 5 p.m. A costume parade for kids, live music by Lenny and the Lounge Lizards, plus booths from local businesses offering crafts, games, and treats will all be part of this fall festival. Park at the San Miguel Fire Station on Rivera, and you can take a free shuttle to the top of Mount Helix. For more information on the event, visit mounthelixpark.org. That's mthelixpark.org.
What's Halloween without a scary good costume contest? You're invited to put on those devil horns or vampire fangs and make your way to La Mesa's The Hills local pub on Saturday, October 28th for a Halloween house party and an opportunity to win $10,000 for best costume. The second annual costume contest starts at 8 p.m. with the best dressed chosen by the crowd vote, so you may want to bring your friends. The grand prize will be given out at midnight, but the party will continue all night long, with special drinks such as Smoky Witch's Brew and Jungle Juice, plus DJ spinning your favorite hit songs. For details, you can visit thehillspub.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine will host its annual Spooky Campover from 3 p.m. Friday, October 27th until noon on October 28th. Bring your own pumpkin to carve, food, camping gear, and best costume. This event promises a wild and ghoulish night under the stars with the rescued animals. There will be a pumpkin carving, s'mores, campfire songs, costume contest, and animal feedings. For ticket prices and reservations, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org. All proceeds benefit this nonprofit facility's work to rescue exotic animals and provide a permanent home for them.
Celebrating its 13th year, the Boulevard Boo Parade will be held on Saturday, October 28th, starting at 10 a.m. With over 70 entries of live entertainment marching on 1 mile of El Cajon Boulevard in the college area, the parade will entertain you with spooky ghouls, goblins, ghosts, and witches to fill you with the Halloween spirit.
Saps at Sea, the official Laurel and Hardy fan club in San Diego, will host its October event, Howlarious Hallow Scream, on October 28th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. The Saps are teaming up with the Theater Organ Society of San Diego to bring you spooky silent movies, plus a special screening of the classic silent horror film, The Cat and the Canary.
You're invited to soak and stretch your way to relaxation and nirvana at the second High Mountain Desert Yoga Retreat, tucked among boulders high in the Incopa and Hakumba Mountains. This 4-day healing event from October 31st to November 3rd will include natural sulfur hot spring pools, healing sessions at the Desert View Tower, including Kundalini Tantra Yoga, Reiki healing, and crystal sound healing. Guests will also savor vegan meals, scenic hikes, and some desert surprises, plus a 3-day stay at the nearby Hakumba Hot Springs Resort. For more details or to register, visit desertviewtower.com.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will hold its Autumn Fest and Plant Sale on November 4th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The campus is located in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. This event features live entertainment, craft vendors, plant sales, kids' activities, gardening workshops, advice from water agencies, and a beer garden. For more information, you can visit thegarden.org.
The 5th annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival will be held at Beegent Ranch in Ramona Saturday, November 4th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Guests can view and purchase fine art in a variety of mediums, taste handcrafted wines, appetizers, lunch entrees, and desserts while picnicking in style beneath the shade of a giant oak tree. Vendors will also be on hand offering art and wine-themed items. A highlight of the event will be a live auction of 6 wine barrels painted by local artists. For tickets and details, you can visit RamonaArtAndWineFest.net.
You're invited to join Falconer Bob Gordon with his hawk Huxley for a live hawk demonstration and Birds of Prey talk. Find them at Mission Trails Regional Park inside the Visitor Center on the first Sunday of each month from 9 a.m. to noon. The next demonstration is set for November 5th. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
The City of El Cajon and the El Cajon Veterans Commission will host a special ceremony honoring our veterans on Veterans Day, November 11th. The ceremony will take place from 1 to 2 p.m. at Centennial Plaza on Civic Center Way in downtown El Cajon, and the community is invited.
The 71st Annual Mother Goose Parade will be held on November 19th, the Sunday before Thanksgiving, starting at 1 p.m. This year's parade theme is Family Traditions. You can see over 100 colorful and exciting parade entries, including floats, marching bands, clowns, equestrians, TV celebrities, and Santa Claus. The parade grand marshal is Randy Jones, former San Diego Padre pitcher and Cy Young Award winner. The parade route runs along downtown's Main Street, from El Cajon Boulevard eastbound to First Street. This popular parade is one of the largest in Southern California and a wonderful way to officially kick off your holiday season. You can learn more at mothergooseparade.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
If you've ever watched the process of a caterpillar becoming a vividly colorful monarch butterfly, you probably have an appreciation for a challenge being issued by the National Pollinator Garden Network. The Million Pollinator Garden Challenge calls on everyone, from horticulture professionals to school children and volunteers, to help create and register 1 million pollinator gardens by the end of this year. Pollinator declines in recent decades have been extreme, and Mary Phillips with the National Wildlife Federation's Garden for Wildlife program says monarch populations have plummeted 90% in the last 20 years.
Monarchs are something people identify. It's an iconic butterfly that many of us have experienced in our childhood. So that's been an amazing motivator to get people to focus and engage around the pollinator issue.
National Garden Clubs, which is headquartered in St. Louis, is among the organizations joining in to encourage people from all walks of life to create their own pollinator gardens. Habitat loss, parasites, and pesticides are among the causes of pollinator declines. Phillips notes that a Cornell study found 1/3 of all the food we eat is the direct result of pollinators. Phillips says the Garden for Wildlife program program helps not only wildlife, but also gives people a daily connection to the natural world, whether they create a garden in the city or the country.
It's very small to very big. Some of these are creating tremendous acres of habitat, and others are kind of connecting corridors across urban settings. So both of those approaches are equally valuable.
Million Pollinator Garden Challenge participants can learn more and register their pollinator gardens online. Plus, they can take a look at the challenge map. For Public News Service, I'm Kevin Patrick.
Each year, the town of Julian comes alive with the sounds of music, fiddle music, along with banjos, guitars, mandolins, and mountain dulcimers at the annual Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest. Recently, we're seeing a revival of interest in the art of fiddling and, more broadly, a renaissance in traditional music both regionally and nationally. Avery Ellisman is the district representative from the California State Old Time Fiddlers Association, which started 40 years ago. Locally, there are now around 60 members on a mission to enhance appreciation for and involvement in old-time fiddling. He says there's been a huge bump in sales of acoustic instruments nationally, according to the National Association of Music Manufacturers. And locally, two major nationally known musical instrument manufacturers, Taylor Guitar and Deering Banjo, are both adding staff here in East County. Baby boomers have the money and the time to rediscover the joys of just fiddling around, a pastime that evokes bygone days when life was simpler and the pace of living was slower, with time to listen, learn, and make some music of your own. Ellisman says of fiddling, "This is the music of the people," adding, "One person sits with and teaches another." Fiddling is most prevalent in rural areas, also a popular pastime to while away time during inclement weather. It's what people did for entertainment, kids, long before the advent of radio, TV, or the internet. Ellisman says, "I consider music to be one of the highest forms of human celebration, a celebration of life. Fiddle music is infectious in a very positive way. The world needs more of that. Though played on the same instrument as a violin," he adds, "fiddle music calls you to dance." Julian's old-time fiddle and pickin' contest has its roots in a Julian banjo and fiddle competition that started over 60 years ago. For many years, it was run by the Julian Lions Club. But as the club's membership aged, interest in hosting competitions waned. The focus shifted to entertainment, and eventually the event dwindled. Ellisman runs the Julian Family Fiddle Camp each spring to teach fiddling skills to the next generation. So he asked the Lions to partner with his group and the State Old Time Fiddlers Association, but he says the Lions declined. So Ellisman turned to the community instead, asking the local Chamber of Commerce and local merchants to support a new and revitalized competition. The community agreed, and the competition has grown ever since. It's now a 2-day event, encouraging visitors to spend the night and help boost Julian's local economy. Ellisman calls Julian the jewel of East County, noting that the event draws people from across the West and as far away as Alaska. The first modern-day Julian Fiddle and Pickin' contest was held in 2014. Fiddling refers to bowed instruments, while picking is for unbowed instruments such as the guitar, mandolin, banjo, and mountain dulcimer. Ellisman notes proudly, "We have kids from age 6 up to age 86, and they're playing together. It's a wonderful way to bridge the generations." Before, Julian's events were not traditional fiddle contests, but now they are. Each competitor must perform 3 elements, a hoedown, a waltz, and a piece of the musician's choice, such as a jig, a polka, or something else. Competitors can compete in age-based categories or in an open competition that any age can enter. The open competition is considered the premier event, with bragging rights for winners who beat all comers. At the 2016 competition, Ellisman's 16-year-old daughter, Shira Ellisman, competed for the first time in the open competition category. Early in the day, youngsters competed, and then in the afternoon, the open picking competition was held, followed by the open fiddling division. Announcer Dwight Warden explained that the history of fiddling goes back to the 1700s in America. Thomas Jefferson was an avid fiddler. Fiddling gained popularity again in the 1900s, thanks to Henry Ford, who liked fiddling so much he had fiddle competitions in all of his dealerships. But then fiddling events shifted to hokum and show fests, with people playing fiddles behind their heads or beating on instruments with broom straws, Warden recalls. More recently, the pendulum has shifted back to traditional fiddling styles that popularized the genre to begin with. In the 1950s, a major competition in Idaho put the focus back on musicianship, and the modern fiddle competition was born. All three pieces must be played within just 4 minutes, and no hokum is allowed. Shira Ellisman opened up the fiddling competition playing Sally Johnson for her Hoedown entry, followed by Morningstar Waltz and Don't Let Your Gal Go Down. And here's a little bit of what this talented fiddler sounded like. The local teenager's teacher is Luke Price, a graduate of the Berklee School of Music, who is also a two-time winner of the National Fiddle Championship. After Shira was finished, the announcer exclaimed, "She's got a future ahead of her!" The competition was stiff, with many other talented performers. After the contest, three of the fiddle judges also performed, Matthew Hartz and Luke Price, both multiple National Fiddle Competition winners, and Mabel Vogt from Idaho. Hartz told the crowd, "I'm excited to be here and come before a group that's so supportive. For us to carry this music and art form forward, we need your support," he added, as some in the crowd offered up donations or purchased CDs. Hartz performed Festival Waltz and Shuck in the Bush to a wildly enthusiastic crowd. Here's a little excerpt of this dual national champion's performance. Finally, the long-awaited announcement of the awards winners came. First, the junior winners were announced, and then the open competitors. Tom Dillon of La Mesa, who plays with a bluegrass band, took first place in the open picking category. Then, the open fiddling winner was announced, and Shira Ellison claimed the top prize, beaming from ear to ear. Afterwards, her teacher, Luke Price, shared with us how he first got interested in music. "My dad started me on guitar and banjo at 3 years old," he said, in between signing autographs from his fans. "I started classical violin at age 8. It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He said, adding, "It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He's come a long way since then, passing along the skills and joy of old-time fiddling to a new generation, including Shira Ellison, as she commences her own musical journey. You can learn fiddling and picking skills locally by signing up through julianfiddlecamp.com and listen to the talented local and national competitors at the next Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest by visiting sandiegofiddler.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Gene Carpenter with a public service announcement from the El Cajon Police Department.
Car crashes are the leading cause of death for teenagers in the United States. To shed light on the epidemic and reduce the number of lives lost, the El Cajon Police Department wants to draw public attention to National Teen Driver Safety Week, October 15th through the 21st. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration reports that nationwide in 2015, 1,972 drivers ages 15 through 18 were involved in fatal collisions. In California, that same year, 283 teens were behind the wheel at the time of fatal collisions, and 63% of those young drivers were at fault. Teen Driver Safety Week will help parents focus attention on setting rules for their teen driver before allowing them to get behind the wheel. These rules can be the difference between life and death. Inexperience is one of the leading causes of teen collisions. The most important thing a parent can do for a new teen driver is to stay involved in their driving life. Take frequent drives with your newly licensed teens to monitor their progress. Parents can reduce dangerous and sometimes deadly behaviors such as driving without seatbelts, speeding, driving while intoxicated, carrying extra passengers, and driving distracted. Rhonda Kraft, director of the California Office of Safety, says cell phone use continues to be a serious and often deadly distraction for all drivers, but it's a significant problem among young, inexperienced drivers. She adds, if you're a parent, guardian, or mentor to a teen driver, lead by example and encourage them to put the phone down and focus on the road. No text message or social media post is more valuable than their lives or the lives of others around them. There are programs for teen drivers and their families. For example, Start Smart, conducted by law enforcement personnel, is a driver safety education class that targets new and future licensed drivers between the ages of 15 through 19 and their parents or guardians. The California Highway Patrol has released a mobile app for the Start Smart designed to assist young people through the process of obtaining their California driver's license. The app includes a step-by-step guide covering everything from the Department of Motor Vehicles Driver Handbook and the final steps for obtaining a provisional license to ultimately achieving an unrestricted California driver license.
One of 68 children born in the U.S. will develop autism spectrum disorder, which can interfere with developing language, reading, educational, and social skills, according to a news release from San Diego State University. Around the world, researchers are discovering and testing new strategies to help improve learning outcomes for children with autism, but vetting and implementing these programs has been a bottleneck. Now, a $1.4 million grant has been awarded to SDSU education professor Jessica Suheinrich by the Institute of Educational Sciences. The three-year grant will be used to study how to improve the implementation and effectiveness of evidence-based education strategies to help students with autism spectrum disorder. She'll be working with colleagues at the UC Davis Medical Investigation of Neurodevelopmental Disorder Institute to examine effectiveness of a statewide resource, the California Autism Professional Training and Information Network, for sharing experiences and ideas. Researchers will also look at policy by schools, school districts, and the state for training teachers and staff. The work complements SDSU's expertise in using neuroimaging to reveal subtle neural signatures of autism in young brains, as well as tracking people with autism throughout their lives and developing therapies. These efforts will be boosted next year with the opening of a functional magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, lab in January. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.